From the Bone Dry Studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another McGrath Saves Christmas Hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Historic droughts across most of the nation have made cut Christmas trees difficult to manage this year. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll reveal how you can safely superhydrate your tree to be and keep it lush until Christmas. And of course, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and laconically laborious lamentations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up faster than your Christmas tree staying fresh as a daisy.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John on the blend today.
Bob Durow composed, conducted, and played much of the Schoolhouse Rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Second antidote to violence is to speak up against it.
WDIY, for 30 years.
From the leafy studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for yet another hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And this week we begin with a wonderful edition of In the News, which we are calling There Are Two Sides to Every Leaf. Every year at this time, state extension services issue bulletins and releases begging people to leave the leaves on their property alone so as not to disturb nature without making any exceptions, advice which I have always found to be more than a little extreme. Ah, but this story is from the latest issue of the National Geographic. So I shouldn't be surprised that they didn't just cut and paste from the annual Leave Your Leaves Alone bulletins and instead present what I consider to be a perfect dose of leaf reality. The article begins with the standard praise for fall leaves in general from Sue Barton, a plant and soil scientist at the University of Delaware, or as we call it here, the U of D. Leaf litter decomposition helps release nutrients into the soil, and it can also store carbon in the ground. Forests sequester this greenhouse gas by capturing our carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Through photosynthesis, that carbon transforms into biomass, which eventually dies and becomes either leaf litter or dead wood from the tree itself. Leaf litter is an important habitat for animals. When the bitter months of winter arrive, dead leaves provide wildlife with a place to shelter and hide from the elements. Below that detritus, moth and butterfly cocoons lie nestled, and bumblebees burrow down to avoid the cold, hibernating over the winter months. Quote, most butterflies and moths overwinter in the landscape. Luna moths, Baltimore checker spot butterflies, and woolly bear caterpillars tuck themselves into leaves for protection from cold weather and predators. Red banded hair streaks lay their eggs on fallen oak leaves. Swallowtail butterflies disguise their cocoons and chrysalis as dried leaves, blending in with the real ones. Then comes the advice that turns this story from you bad leaf raker you into a treatise on the reality of the leaves that fall around your house. First, Barton suggests raking the leaves off your lawn because letting the leaves cover the grass doesn't allow sunlight to penetrate and prevents the lawn from photosynthesizing. Or use a mulching mower to cut the leaves into small pieces. That's great for the lawn. And this is the exact advice I've been dishing out for years. Then it gets better. Quote, What you shouldn't do is put them in a plastic bag and send them to a landfill, because you're getting rid of a resource that won't be reused in somebody's landscape, to which I heartily agree. The only thing worse you can do is to burn the leaves. Then soil scientist Barton comes fully into the organic gardening corner. Quote, you can compost your leaves, and once fully composted, put the compost on your lawn or around your plants. The goal is to recycle the leaf litter and either use it to feed your lawn naturally or turn it into compost. Either way will achieve that. Bravo, National Geo! I would never advise anyone to go into wooded or other natural areas and disturb fallen leaves or anything else in the wild. But mulch mowing them into your lawn is an excellent idea, as is shredding the rest of the leaves that fall near your house into a compost pile. Either way, the soil wins out.
Little bugs. Two little bugs. Two little bugs.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, I will tell you how to take a Christmas tree and make it lush. You should be able to handle the super hydration advice I'll be giving shortly. After some of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Deb, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for making it. We appreciate that. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm at school today, but took a few minutes out to talk to you.
That's great. Okay, so what school? Where are you?
I work in Pleasantville, New Jersey. I work in an elementary school.
Okay.
I teach.
Yeah, when we were talking a little bit earlier, I thought I heard children in the background.
Yes, many children in the background. It's kindergarten through fifth grade school.
Okay. So, I mean, as far as I can consider, that's like the ideal age for teachers is the young kids.
Yes, I love this age group, and I've been doing this for 16 years. And, yeah, the kids are fun. They're terrific. They're always filled with questions, which I love.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, by the way, thank you for your service. It really is service. Yeah, it's amazing to see what Art Linkletter used to have a show called Children Say the Darndest Things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to watch that show. Yeah. I actually teach ESL, which is English as a second language.
Right.
So I'm supporting the kids in there with the ones that are in their general education class and just helping them build vocabulary and background knowledge. And we have a lot of fun doing that. Yeah. And it's wonderful to see the light bulb go on over their heads.
Some people say that I should be learning English as a second language. So.
You're fine.
All right. So what can we do you for today?
Oh, my goodness. So I've lived in this house for almost 20 years. The people that live behind me have many, many cats. And, you know, the cats meander through my yard. But this year, for whatever reason, they dug up huge sections of the lawn. Huh. Like, it's just like they are tearing the grass up. So it is just down to the dirt, and I wasn't sure what was making this issue, and I had the lawn guy look at it, I had the bug guy look at it, and finally I saw this big old, one of the big old brown cat, and he was just digging away like there's no tomorrow. There's no holes in the ground. that's what the bug guy and I have devised, that it's the cats that are digging up the yard. So I don't know how to keep them from stopping it, because my backyard used to, lawn used to be beautiful, and now it's just got, you know, like huge 2-3 foot sections of lawn missing.
Well, this is unusual behavior. We have lots of questions about cats pooping in raised beds. But to be honest, I don't think I've ever heard of cats tearing up lawns and digging in them. Now, that sounds exactly like squirrels at this time of year, because in my neighborhood, they're burying black walnuts for the winter. And, you know, in other any place with nut trees, you're going to have squirrels digging up everything and storing their nuts. I have three miniature Leyland spruces out in front of my house in a really cool planter. And the day after we planted them, they're all uprooted, and there's a lousy black walnut down there in the base.
Oh, wow.
The other creatures that do this at this time of year are skunks.
Oh.
Skunks are nomadical. They're going to wander around. Although I tell people to be careful this time of year, they will set up a den for the winter. So make sure they can't get into the crawl space under your house, or you're going to be sorry.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't do that. Yeah.
But you have actually seen at least one of the cats doing the digging.
Yes.
And
yes.
Did you chase it or let it play out?
I watched for a little bit, and then I ran into my yard and chased him away and banging pots. And I do have squirrels. I've always had squirrels there. And the cats came, and then the squirrels left because they unfortunately killed a couple of squirrels, which is unpleasant to have to dispose of.
No,
but the
evil,
squirrels only did...
evil squirrels.
What?
Evil squirrels. They're
evil
doing
squirrels.
The job of Marshall Dillon.
I guess so. Yeah, the squirrels dig little holes for the acorns, but I've never seen the squirrels do like a whole, it's a ginormous section. Honestly, it's really blowing my mind.
Right. So, and your lawn also went through the drought, right?
It did go through the drought. So I was wondering, you know, I don't know whether it has something to do with a drought. I also eliminated my lawn service.
Good.
So we missed the grout treatment. Yeah, so he said it's definitely not grubs. So, you know, now I'm trying to I put down diatomaceous earth to keep them.
Not the worst
off of it,
idea. Yeah.
Or chili powder.
Okay. Now I think you're getting closer. So, let's drop back a second. What kind of shape is your lawn in now?
It's starting to come back now. It's green now.
Right.
Because I planted seeds, but the seeds aren't exactly taking where I planted them because the cats are still doing damage.
Right.
But the lawn has definitely come back.
When did you put down the seed?
A month ago.
Okay. Did you irrigate?
Yes. I've been irrigating all summer.
Okay.
All
right. So... here's the deal. We can do a couple of things. This is unusual behavior. My only thought to explain what the cats are doing is they're going for voles or moles in your lawn.
Okay.
And with all those cats around, they would bring you voles and moles to show off. Does that happen?
No, that hasn't happened. But, you know, over the history of living in the house, I have seen the occasional vole. And I have to keep like a brick on top of my garbage can because otherwise they route about the garbage can.
Oh, that,
I know that they're also.
No, that would be raccoons.
Oh, you know what? My neighbor had this gigantic raccoon crawling up her porch roof, and I called her, and then the raccoon went into her attic.
Maybe it's a raccoon,
you think?
There are cats that look a little like raccoons, like Maine Coons. Do you think it could have been a raccoon?
I don't know. Those guys kind of come out at night, and I'm seeing activity during the day. So
okay.
I don't know.
Let's go back. Okay, so you've taken steps to repair the lawn, but
yes.
the lawn is still being attacked. Unfortunately, yes. we're entering the time of year that's going to make it difficult for you to implement my first suggestion, which is a motion-activated sprinkler pointed at the lawn. And that way, whatever walks on the lawn, the motion head will sense it and throw a couple of cups of cold water at them. But obviously, that only works if the hose is safe from freezing. But
yeah.
I want you to look around, and I want you to get one now and set it up. And don't be afraid to run it during warm spells, and then you'll have it as soon as we get out of the really cold months. Other than that, you're right on top of it with hot pepper shake, hot pepper powder, chili powder. Did you ever get into Philadelphia's Chinatown?
It's been quite a while. Why? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, one of the problems with using hot pepper as a deterrent is you have to buy a lot of it to cover something
okay.
like a lawn. And the prices in American supermarkets are very high. But in a good Chinese grocery store, you can get bags of them the size of pillows. And then you just run them through a coffee grinder that you'll never use for coffee again, wearing a dust mask, and spread
right.
that over top of the lawn. It won't hurt the lawn at all. Birds will come and eat it because they like that internal heat over the winter. And that's your best bet for getting your lawn through the winter. After that, the motion-activated sprinkler will take care of everything.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Thank you.
Sounds
interesting.
And make sure your neighbor gets their cat spayed and neutered.
Well, he has some inside cats and some outside cats. So the outside cats, he has never taken to the vet, sadly. He's never taken to the vet.
There are many animal rights groups and animal medical groups that will come out, trap the feral ones, spay or neuter them, and then return them. That way you break the cycle.
I will suggest that to him.
Okay. And there's an organization I used to have on the show pretty frequently called Alley Cat Allies, A-L-L-I-E-S. And their website is real easy. It's alleycat.org. They have a worldwide connection with people who volunteer to go out, catch them, take them to a vet who's part of the plan, and then return them after they're certified. Alley
okay,
Cat.
I have to research that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I will.
All right. Very good, Deb. Take care.
All right. Nice speaking to you, Mike. Thank you for
you
your
too.
Help.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and seriously think about crawling back into bed as I continue to detox from my annual turkey tryptophan overdose. But don't you go falling asleep face first in mashed potatoes just yet, because we'll be right back with advice on how to keep your cut Christmas tree fresh despite the drought and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up later, we have seriously, really important advice. The drought that has affected much of the country has made Christmas trees possibly dry and brittle if you don't protect them correctly. And hopefully I'm getting this advice to you in time to do it. And I'll warn you right now, get a bow saw and a big bucket of water at the ready. But now it's time for your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100 extension number 3. Linus, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike. My question has to do with, I planted some small seedling Japanese maples. They were grafted in an area, and one was planted in the fall, and then one was planted in the spring, and then both of them later in the spring just wilted and died. And so doing some research on the internet, it looked like I got verticillium wilt.
Where are you, Linus?
I'm outside of Washington, D.C. I'm in the town of Oakton, which is right next to Vienna. I'm on the border of Vienna in Virginia.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, Vienna, where Wolf Trap is, right?
Exactly.
The outdoor performance area. You mentioned that these trees were grafted?
Yes.
Who did the grafting?
I bought them from two different vendors, and I could tell that they were grafted. When they give you the instructions, say, make sure you don't plant below the graft.
You know, that seems unusual to me. It's been a long time since I planted a Japanese maple, but I kind of remember them being on their own roots. Was there, did any explanation, anything like that, other than the fact that you saw the graft line?
Well, these are special kinds of Japanese maples, this special variety. One's called Peeve Starfish. And so the leaf shape is very different. And so I think in order to have the leaf consistent, they graft that onto whatever rootstock they use.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense to me in for two reasons. And the one's a starfish. What's the other one?
I don't remember exactly, but it was a very fine leaf willow.
I found one of the big causes of death for these trees is verticillium wilt, which is kind of weird because I've always said that verticillium wilt really affects tomatoes, and all the books will tell you that it affects other plants as well, but I really hadn't seen the effects. And as I went deeper into the research, all of the authors agreed on one thing, that no Japanese maple ever died directly of verticillium. There was something wrong with the tree or the planting area, and that made the tree very weak. So then the verticillium, had an easy target. One of the biggest problems with Japanese maples is poor drainage. So might this be an area with not the best drainage on your property?
At the top of the hill, I'm guessing, and not. But when you talk about sort of young, sick plants maybe succumbing more readily, I replaced one of the Japanese maples with the same variety, but it was a much larger plant. So hopefully by having a more established plant, that one older plant, that one will be more resistant to verticillium wilt.
Yeah, and in my experience, the kind of plants you described, the fancy cultivars. They're a lot of fun, but they're going to be the first ones to go overboard in a storm. The basic type may not be exciting, although it is a really nice four-season tree, but it's always going to be hardier than these hybrid or grafted varieties. You knew not to put wood mulch around the base of the tree and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not growing out of a treated lawn, and you don't give it tree spikes or anything like that.
Nope.
Okay. Do you mulch with compost?
I will be, because I'm just starting a compost pile.
Okay. Yeah, you'll eventually get compost from that, but don't be afraid of buying compost. Or you're in the Washington, D.C. area, right? You have access to Leaf Grow, the the Maryland compost that they make from all the fall leaves. All right, well, good luck in the future. And I don't blame you for trying to grow these plants, but these tricky ones can be a little tricky. 610-694-8100. Jesse and Nick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. We're real glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Well, thanks for being had, guys. Now, where are you?
We are at Newark Charter School in Newark, Delaware.
And you're students, obviously.
Yeah.
And you were telling us before something. Tell us the story. You've been going to your charter school all your life, right? Let's hear from Nick.
So Jesse came in kindergarten. I actually joined in first grade. And what's cool about our school is we've been growing. And we actually, so we were the first time they opened the elementary school, they opened kindergarten. The first class, kindergarten class we had was our grade level. And now they opened up the high school. We had our first graduating senior class a couple years ago. But our class will be the first class to go K through 12 in this school, which is pretty exciting for us.
That's great. And sounds like you've enjoyed the experience.
Yes, of course.
Jesse, you get started. What can we do for you?
Well, both of us are working on a project in our engineering class. And we have to look at a problem and create a solution. So we're both interested in conservation. So we chose rainwater harvesting. And we're planning on designing a water tank-like system that can collect water and distribute it autonomously and without using energy. So we know you know a lot about horticulture and the products that exist out there, and we'd like to know if there's any area that we can concentrate on and improve upon in our design process.
Nick, do you want to add anything?
Basically, we're looking into this from kind of an outside perspective, because I know I own a garden, and I know Jesse's got a lawn and everything, but we're by no means experts in this field, and that's where we could really use your help. Like, if you wanted a system that could collect rainwater for you to use in your garden, what would you want to have with it? That's mainly why we're calling here today.
Right. And these systems do exist in several different forms, but I will remind you guys that this would have to be probably for a different part of the country. As you fellows know, especially the gardener, we were saturated with way too many inches of rain. You know, now if you were real rocket scientists, if you two were real brainiacs, you'd figure out a way to send our excess rain over to the West Coast so they wouldn't have all these wildfires. And you're geniuses. You've been going to this school all your life. You should be able to do that. Matter transfer. All you need is enough energy, right, guys?
Right. And a problem that we're focusing on is how to create that energy. We're looking at hydrostatic pressure and gravity. So however we can utilize that in our product can definitely be more attractive to consumers.
There are a lot of workshops held by Master Gardeners and Extension Services throughout the Northeast that feature a system called rain barrels. And this is a giant 55-gallon barrel that, as you guys wisely note, is up on stacks of pavers or in an elevated area so that the water can flow into the rain barrel from the gutters, but then it's up high enough that gravity can then feed it down without the need for a pump or electricity. And some people will simply utilize this to put a watering can underneath and do hand watering. Other people, more sophisticated, will run watering tubes into their garden and just turn on the spigot when the garden needs water early in the morning and let the rain barrel empty out. And in an area that has a lack of water, in which your systems are incredibly necessary, the second is the better way, because the more you water close to the surface, the less evaporation there is. The less the average rainfall, the more a system like yours is needed. Back when organic gardening was still in existence, the magazine also had a program for community gardens, in which they actually built giant cisterns that could hold thousands of gallons of water with multiple water outlets. And these were simply fed by rain, but they were large enough that they could fill up during the wet times and then be emptied during the dry times. And these things could store enough water. You know, typically, even in the Northeast, it's not that wet in the summer, but it is in the spring and the fall and over the winter. So that's like a reservoir. That's when your cistern fills up, and then you utilize it during the dry times. So these are, and there's also a third type of system, which you may want to look at, but it is not as energy efficient. There are companies now that are building cisterns underground, whether your home is new or under construction, and all of the water, storm water from your driveway, all of the water from your gutters, it all goes to this underground cistern. So there's no evaporation now. There's no loss. And then when necessary, the water is pumped out to spigots or out to, water lines that are in the garden. But where your system could be most utilized is honestly out in the West. Although, again, we may not have a wet summer like this. So you're looking at rain barrels, and then you're looking at larger structures. And again, you already have the basic element down in that you use gravity to be your friend. One of the things you may want to do is compare the efficiency of water harvesting off of a one-story home, a rancher, versus a two- or three-story home. Because the taller the home, the higher up you can get that water tank, that water holder, and then the more natural water pressure you're going to have. Now, have you guys thought about mosquito breeding?
Yes. So we were looking at, one of our main sources was a WHO document about the health, safety, and different things about rainwater.
Right. And World Health Organization.
Yes. Their major concern was, of course, mosquitoes and the possibility of them getting inside the rain barrel. So we've been looking in, and a lot of products feature mosquito netting to keep mosquitoes out. We found a lot of barrels that are actually sealed to the outside. So the only way mosquitoes would get in is through the gutter systems, which already have the netting on them to prevent leaves and stuff from clogging.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. There are, you need mosquito screens generally on top of them. I've seen the designs that you talk about where it's the barrel has a lid, the gutter fits into the lid. That would have to be sealed with caulking. Female mosquitoes are very small, and if they sense water, they can get inside that tank. And then the mosquitoes that hatch out could very easily get out any holes. So it would have to be tight fitting. Either that, or in addition, if you wanted to be really clever, there's an all-natural substance called BTI that prevents mosquitoes from breeding in standing water. And if you were to position this barrel or this structure near, say, a second floor window, then once a month you could drop a BTI donut into the top of the barrel. You wouldn't have to worry about netting. You wouldn't have to worry about screening. And you would be making a mosquito trap. The female mosquitoes would still go to that water to lay their eggs, but the BTI would make the eggs inert. They would not hatch into biting adults. So you could have an open source of water that would reduce the number of mosquitoes in the landscape and still water the garden.
That sounds like definitely something we can contribute into our solution. Thank you for that.
Are there any other substances or pests that can get into, that could potentially get into our rain barrel and that we should plan on how to avoid?
There's not going to be anything other that would get into your rain barrel that wouldn't almost become fertilizer. Like if birds poop in the water a little bit, I mean, that's simply food for your plants. You're probably going to have to design or incorporate some method of screening at the outtake if you do the open barrel method. And you'd have to lay screening over top during leaf fall season. because you simply don't want to make it clog up. And remember that when you're talking about clogs, the bigger the spout, the more the water can come out, even if there's a little bits of debris in there. But the smaller the spout, you really have to have a clean machine that is just water and none of the debris from the gutters or anything like that.
And why do you think rainwater harvesting in general is a good practice for consumers? Does it help the economy? How does it help the environment?
Well, first of all, it helps the plants. If you're growing in the city, your water is treated with fluoride, maybe aluminum, maybe other water purification things that plants don't especially like, whereby the rainwater is going to be very clean. And there just seems to be something about rainwater that plants prefer. It's like it's in their DNA. And if it does go through a gutter that's got some dirt up there, some debris, some leaf fall, some seeds from the trees, then, you know, it's almost creating a little bit of a compost tea. Plus, with all the impervious surfaces in America today, rainwater can now be more destructive than it was 100 years ago when there was a lot of gardens and lawns and just dirt-filled areas where the water could infiltrate. Now it turns into raging rivers. So anything you can do to reduce the amount of water that goes into water purification systems, that runs into streams and rivers, the more you can reduce that flow and slow down that flow, that's good for all aspects of the environment, and it's very cost effective. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Nick, from the Newark Charter High School in Newark, Delaware. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and deliver valuable advice to anyone who plans to get a live Christmas tree for planting outdoors after the holidays. That's a tree with its roots all wrapped up and bald and burlapped and all that good stuff. First, that tree needs to stay outside until almost Christmas. Then it can come into the house for a few days and a few days only before it needs to go back outside for planting. And dig that planting hole now before the ground freezes hard. But don't go shoveling that hole. Make it wide but not deep just yet, because we'll be right back to save your cut Christmas tree and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. What can you expect to hear next week? Hilarity, bad jokes, a small amount of useful information, and me. As long as these bolt cutters keep working. Boy, you know, this station must buy locks by the dozen. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's probably on the next You Bet Your Garden. Maybe. Plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, I will tell you how to take a Christmas tree that was cut in a drought-stricken area and make it lush and safe to bring indoors. Hopefully you don't have yours inside yet, but I'll try to help those of you who do. But if you have not yet cut your Christmas tree, congratulations. 610-694-8100. Dennis, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Dennis. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, sir?
I am just ducky. Where are you, man?
I am in a suburb of Oklahoma City, Yukon.
It's so I love these out-of-place names, if you know what I mean. You know, will the real Kansas City stand up? All right, what can we do for you today, sir?
My question is about how best to protect herbs outdoors in the ground over the winter. And particularly, I have Italian oregano. They're all perennials, Italian oregano, sage, and rosemary. And my question is, should we go ahead and cut some of that down? The oregano, probably not, because it's flat and low on the ground, but the sage and the rosemary are about a foot tall. And so I'm concerned about exactly how we should prepare the plants and then how we should mulch them to protect them over the winter.
Okay. So you bring up an interesting and intricate question. It's not that these plants are perennials or annuals. If anything, I would call them half-hardy perennials. In your part of the country, where I know winters can get cold for short periods of time, but basically you're much warmer than I am in Pennsylvania, rosemary typically survives the winter quite well, especially, again, because you're in Oklahoma, if it's protected from the wind. Over the winter, the wind, and your wind is legendary, I've experienced it, really sucks the moisture out of your plants outdoors. So you may even want to make sure you water them during warm spells because their moisture is constantly being pulled. Conversely, the only thing outside of climate that can kill rosemary is wet feet. It grows best out of like busted up rocks. It loves a lousy soil, and it can't stand wet, compacted soil. Did I hear you say raised beds?
No, these are in the ground.
Yeah, but you have raised beds.
Well, yeah, brand new raised beds, right?
Okay, I think that the herbs should be in raised beds as well. You know, so then you can rig something up easily to block the prevailing wind. But again, if you get deluge after deluge after deluge, you want to make sure not to add any water, maybe shovel off the occasional snow from around the plant because it can't stand to have its roots saturated. Where I live, we have to bring our rosemary inside for the winter. It's funny, years ago I remember one of the universities released a brand new rosemary, frost resistant. And indeed, it was the last one to die in my garden over winter. But again, if you're in the heat sink of the city, I always refer to a community garden on South Street in Philadelphia. The heat sink of the city, plus the fact that this is a walled-in garden, they have a rosemary tree that must be 20 feet high at this point. And it really is protection from the elements, not to get oversaturated, but to, again, where you are, be aware of the effects of that wind, and you want to kind of cut it down to protect it or something, right?
Yes.
Don't do that. Go out and harvest what you need when you need it, and try to do that frequently because then you can feel up the leaves or the needles, and if they're nice and lush, everything is fine. If they're starting to get a little crinkly, don't be afraid to water even in the winter time. And of course, mulch with shredded leaves or pine straw around the base of the plants. But just in general, I like to see everything growing in raised beds.
Is there any justification, Mike, for transplanting these three into the raised bed now?
Now, huh? Well, what's your now like? what's the weather?
Now? Well, it's in the 50s right now, and it's not going to go down below freezing until the day after next. Well, it's going to be next Friday, week from tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I would say this is a perfect time. Dig a wider hole than the root system would seem to hold and get the other planting hole ready. Drop the plant in at the same height it was growing in its previous place and then water it really well with a hose dripping, for instance, for several hours. And then, obviously, you'll keep track of the rain and any snow you get. And, you know, this is true, by the way, of people who are planting new trees and shrubs at this time of year. You got to keep watering if it's dry and or windy. Low humidity in the winter and the kind of whipping winds you guys have to endure, they can dry a plant out like nobody's business. But yes, there's so many advantages to raised beds, including you won't be bending over anymore.
Excellent, excellent.
Okay, and for everybody else out there, the herbs that Dennis mentioned and other ones, you should research these, not in general, but from your state extension service. They're going to be the best ones to tell you if they are winter hardy or if they need to come inside like houseplants. That's what I do with my rosemary. But you need the most local advice you can get because these things change all over the country.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty well addressed it, sir.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for a very essential question of the week, which we're calling Tough Year for Christmas Trees. The warnings are all over the place. If the tree you wish to garnish for the holidays has been grown in a drought-stricken area, you must treat it differently this year. Here in my native Pennsylvania, for example, we have endured the driest late summer and fall in recorded history. The last time it rained even close to an inch was back in mid-August. We are down a foot of rain for this time of year. Not a couple of inches, 12 of them. Wildfires are breaking out all over the country, as well as around me. They have become common here in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey, which likely never saw many of them before. A local Christmas tree farmer has to explain that he's refusing to sell any trees until December. I know that some people would like to have a decorated tree in the house for Thanksgiving, but that tree would drop all of its needles long before Christmas. Another tree farmer explained that the farm had already lost all of their young trees, despite constant and costly irrigation. He explained that the large established trees have survived, so don't expect any actual shortages this year. But in 8 to 10 years, it could be slim pickings. Now, I'm going to explain how you can safely have a fresh cut tree in the house this year. Now, if you already have a cut tree in the house and decorated, make sure it's not near a heat source and water it really often. Even trees that weren't cut during a drought can need up to 2 gallons of water a day indoors. If you don't already have one of those no-neil watering gadgets, I'll explain later, get one and keep it filled. Low indoor humidity is already common at this time of year, and drought only makes it worse. So running a humidifier pointed at the tree would be an excellent idea, as would turning the heat down in that room overnight. Now, people with their trees already up and in the house need to check the branches daily. If you feel lush greenness, things are good. But if the branches are already dry, I'm sorry, man, you might need to start over. Now for the good news. This is a big weekend for tree shopping. And with the knowledge you'll now obtain, you can ensure having a fresh, safe tree by following my patented Christmas tree advice. If the tree is already pre-cut, be cautious. Be obsessive about branch feel, and don't be afraid to ask where the tree is from and when it was cut. I doubt that this is common, but it would be a huge bonus if the base of the tree is already sitting in water. Your best bet is a cut-your-own tree farm, where ideally you actually can do the cutting yourself, or you can watch someone do it in front of you. Then, no matter what, have a large container of water and a bow saw at the ready. Again, no matter how you obtained the tree, use the bow saw, borrow one if you have to make a fresh cut at the base of the tree. If the tree was just cut fresh in front of you, take off 2 inches and immediately plunge it into the deepest water you can manage. This will only take a day or two, so use a bathtub if you must. If the tree was already cut when you picked it up, take off 2 inches and then take a good look at the base. If it's sappy, get it in water right away. If the base looks dead after the cut, take off more until you get to sappy. Note, never chip away at the bark down low for any reason. That's the part of the tree that carries water up to the top. And that's a lesson I personally learned years and years ago when I bought too big a tree and, quote, had to shave off enough bark for it to fit in our tree stand. Within a week, I had a Nightmare Before Christmas tree that Jack Skellington would have loved. So don't make the same mistake, okay? Back to your cut tree. Stand it up straight and into the water right after the trunk cutting is done. Note, I give this advice every year, no matter what the weather has been like, and people always tell me how shocked they are by the amount of water the tree sucks up. And this year, you're likely to be dealing with a tree that's down 4 or 5 gallons, maybe more, to start. So keep an eye on that water tub and be ready to add more if, or I should say when, the water level drops down quickly. After a day or two, the tree should be good and saturated. It will feel heavier. Then comes the tree stand. Face it, you are not going to be crawling around down there several times a day to water. So start out with one of the many tree watering devices that are available. Some are long tubes that allow you to water from the top. Others are disguised as Christmas presents that sit next to the tree and feed water to the base via a tube. I found several examples of the fake gift box style on Amazon. Scroll through the tree watering devices choices and look for one that holds 3.9 or 4 gallons of water. One of which I just noted was selling for $20, but it didn't have any reviews yet. Shop carefully, but make sure that you have a tree watering device that you don't have to get down to the base of the tree, because you're going to lose that game. And no matter what, if you get one of the boxes, keep that water box filled. Well, that sure was some strict protocol to follow if you want to have a happily hydrated tree in the house this year. Now, wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive question of the week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes! My producer is threatening to turn off my little tree hose if I don't get out of this studio. Whew! We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100. That's 610-694-8100, and just follow the prompts. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at our new email address, youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. And please don't ask me how we got the number one. I don't understand it myself. Either way, please, please, please include your phone number and location. You'll find that new phone number, our new email address, a link to the Gardens Alive archive of previous answers, and new and improved links to our numerous podcast sites. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when somebody told him that there was no Santa Claus, but then he got presents anyway. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Check out her fine work and join our cockamamie horticultural community at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprote. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our guardian angel is the lovely Jonas Bowen. Our incredible assistant is the legendary awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be trying to compensate for our insanely dry indoor air by remembering to water my houseplants much more often until we meet again next week. Humidifier, that's it. I need a humidifier, a big one out there.